হাত তো দুল দোলা লেগেছে, ঘুমন্ত বাসনা আজ জেগেছে। আজ তো দুল দোলা লেগেছে, ঘুমন্ত বাসনা আজ জেগেছে। দেখো না আকাশ তোমারই সরমে হাত ভেঙেছে, আলিঙ্গনে এসো আমার হৃদয় ভরে, আনন্দের বন্যা আনো একটু পরশ করে।
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
We're going to start today in Australia, where progressives scored a massive victory in the Australian elections. Those were on Saturday. Dozens of you emailing me about this and saying, David, you've got to cover what's happening in Australia, because not only is it a massive victory for the left, it's also a big signal about what could be possible, maybe, in the United States if the United States became significantly less crazy. And we'll get to that in a moment. The Liberal Party in Australia, led by the Prime Minister Scott Morrison, wanted a fourth term in a row. And the opposition, the main opposition, the strongest opposition, was the left-wing Labour Party, led by Anthony Albanese. Votes are still being counted, but it does appear, as of this morning, as though the Labour Party will have the ability to form a government due to some major wins that they had. And as of right now, and again, they're still counting votes, these numbers may change. As of this morning, I should say, this morning, Australia time, Labour looks to be up to 73 seats, while the Liberal Party appears to have lost 24 seats from 75 before the election down to only 51. This is a big defeat for the centrist Liberal Party, and it is a crushing victory for the left-wing Labour Party. Now, also of note, the Green Party, led by Adam Bandt, appears to have secured 3 seats. They previously had 1, so gaining 2 from 1 to 3 seats. As of this morning, the Green Party, although the final numbers may change a little bit. So this would make Anthony Albanese the 4th Labour leader. And by the way, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The 4th Labour leader to win control of the government since World War II. So the first question is, how on earth did labor achieve this? What did they run on? Well, a huge component of labor's 2022 platform was climate change. It was a platform of renewal, not revolution, and labor making a number of promises along the lines of the environment and dealing with climate change. Labor promised to nearly double Australia's 2030 target cuts to carbon emissions, saying, let's cut by 43% by 2030 and be at completely net zero by 2050. Very ambitious. Is it possible to do that? Well, time will tell, but they ran on it and the voters liked it. Transitioning to renewable energy, upgrade the nation's energy grid, roll out solar banks and community batteries. As many of you know, it's great that solar panels are becoming more and more efficient, but you've got to be able to store that energy to really increase the viability of solar at a larger level. The Labor Party said that they would approve new coal mines if they stack up environmentally and economically. So not saying we're not doing any more fossil fuels, but saying it's really got to make sense in context. Promise to keep the Australian Great Barrier Reef more protected, to protect endangered species, to do more about bushfire recovery, and also campaigned on increasing Australia's national minimum wage, more funding for childcare centers, nursing homes, and disability services. And understand that this is not communism. This is not socialism. There were right-wingers all over Twitter and all over Troth Central and all of these other places saying Australia has gone completely communist. Now, the really funny thing is many of the very same people would say that the Liberal Party was also communist. Now, understand that this is true, what I would call left, center, left. You've got the center. You've got the center left, which would be like the Liberal Party, like Justin Trudeau in Canada, more or less. That's center left. And then you've got, this is not far left. This is what I would call left, center left. It's social democracy. It's certainly to the left of Biden and Justin Trudeau, but it is not socialism and it is not communism. It's basically where I am. It's social democracy in something more or less approximating the Nordic model, the Northern European model. So understand that many of the same people that are now saying, oh, Australia has elected socialists, they say Justin Trudeau is a socialist. They said that the Australian Liberal Party was also socialist when they were not. So these people, you can't really go to them. This is going to be a major experiment. Can Labor in power get things done? And maybe even more importantly, are the things Labor wants to do actually viable? Will they work? Because another big criticism of many of the ideas that I and other social democrats espouse is that stuff would never work if you had the opportunity to make it law, to make it policy, to actually do this stuff. It will implode your country. It will be a disaster for your country. Well, let's see. And depending on the level of obstruction that's possible in Australia, we may in a few years have some answers. Do these ideas actually work, despite what the right loves to say when people like me and others propose them in the United States? So it's going to be a fascinating time. And this is, we can't shortchange what this is. This is a massive victory for the left running on climate change, environmental justice, economic justice, renewable energy, all of these things we've been talking about. A couple of notes. Stephanie from Australia wrote into me and said, quote, one of the most interesting aspects of this has been a large number of very wealthy, traditionally Liberal Party inner city districts being taken by a group of loosely aligned independents who are economically moderate right, but pro action on climate change, political integrity and gender equality. This is being seen as a repudiation of the conservative government's move to the right towards a more Republican style. Would an independent movement like that, with funding from rich, moderate conservative backers, as is the case here, have any chance in similar areas of the U.S.? Well, the question in the U.S. is, I don't know that we have that group. I mean, I guess anecdotally, there are some center right moderates who are quite socially liberal and pro action on climate change. But I don't really know that that's really a big contingent. I mean, here, you know, if you think of the center right in the United States, and I know everybody, this is fraught because people would say those aren't really center right people. If you think of the center right in the United States, which is people like Joe Manchin and Mitt Romney, they don't seem big on taking bold action on climate. They seem to really want to kind of just protect business interests when it comes to thinking about climate. So sure, Stephanie, it would work if we had that contingent in the United States. I don't know that we do, but I'm willing to have my mind changed. Also, our friend Josh Zepps, who I've been on his show. I don't remember if he's been on my show. He's Australian. He had a good tweet. Quote, "The lesson of the Australian election is unambiguous. If you refuse to address a big problem that voters persistently say they care about, they'll smack you down. Australians are fed up with excuses about climate chaos. They've been saying this for years. Welcome to democracy." Hopeful results in Australia, a really big deal. All right, I have something amazing for you guys. Within just a couple of weeks of the leaked news that the Supreme Court will soon be overturning Roe v. Wade, 2022 House of Representatives polling has completely reversed, and in a new NPR PBS Marist national poll, Democrats are now plus five over Republicans looking at the November congressional elections. Now, we're not going to go crazy and get ahead of ourselves. I'm not going to start ripping apart my microphone and burning it and celebrating anything. Not that I would do that. Anyway, we're going to look through this piece by piece. And in order to do that, we have to first start with what would we expect in such a midterm. Typically, in a midterm, the party that is not in the White House does well. Right now, Democrats are in the White House. Joe Biden took the White House from Trump in 2020. And so we would expect Republicans to do really well in the midterms. Now, let's look at some previous examples. In 2018, after Donald Trump took power in 2016, Democrats were plus seven in polling going into the midterms, and they ended up plus eight in an aggregate of congressional races. OK, Trump wins next midterm, Democrats plus 7-8. In the 2014 midterms, after Barack Obama won re-election, Republicans were plus two and they ended up winning by almost plus six. Obama re-election, Republicans win. OK, 2010, Barack Obama had just won in 2008 over John McCain, taking the White House from Republicans previously held by George W. Bush. Obama wins 2008. 2010, Republicans were plus nine in the midterms, ended up plus seven in those midterms. Disastrous midterms for Democrats. OK, so normally these first midterms, in particular, the first ones, but even after a Democratic reelection, you expect to see Republicans do well. We now have a stunning new poll. These numbers, you really have to see them to believe them. 47% of registered voters now say they will support the Democrat on the ballot in this year's congressional midterm, while 42% say they will back the Republican. That is plus five for Democrats in advance of these midterms. Now, we want to be thorough. We don't look at just one poll. We look at an average of recent polls. And if you look at the Real Clear Politics average of recent polls, you still have Republicans plus two looking at the generic congressional vote. Now, that is dramatically lower than it has been in any recent first midterm after the party controlling the White House changes power. And it is declining, whereas Republicans were polling about an average of 48% in February and about 47% in mid-March. And they peaked at 47% again in mid-May. Now, Republicans are down from where they were. Could Republicans still win? Of course. Of course, it's still the most likely scenario. This is just one poll. But we are now seeing multiple polls. In an Economist YouGov poll, Democrats are leading congressional vote generic. In a Politico Morning Consult poll, Democrats are leading. And yes, in that recent NPR PBS Marist poll I just mentioned, Democrats are now plus five. What this means is that the midterm might not be over. the impact of the Roe v. Wade news, especially if and when it becomes official, when the Supreme Court finally announces its ruling, it could really give Democrats a boost. And what it means at the individual level is every one of us must vote. If you've ever voted before, you should vote. If you've ever thought about voting, you should vote. If you've never voted, you should vote. If you weren't old enough to vote in 2020, but now you're old enough to vote legally, of course, you should vote. If you've ever heard of voting, like if that's a concept you've ever heard about, you should vote, because it doesn't have to be the disaster that it was shaping up to be. It seems as though the forthcoming Roe v. Wade decision is absolutely hurting Republicans. One other interesting note from that poll, which I think just should be mentioned, is on the question of overturning Roe v. Wade. 64% of Americans do not believe Roe v. Wade should be overturned, basically by a 2-to-1 margin, 2/3, 1/3. Americans do not want the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. So if and when that happens, it could be exactly the boost on which Democrats might be able to ride to. OK, could it be victory in November? Maybe. But could it be a much, much smaller loss than what it was looking like 3 months ago? That very much could be. And as I've said before, Joe Biden hasn't done that much to help Democrats in November. And we'll take all the help we can get to get these Republicans or keep these wacky Republicans out of power. If they want to hurt themselves by virtue of their own Supreme Court picks, making a very unpopular decision when it comes to Roe v. Wade, I'll take the help from anybody we can get it. Anybody we can get it from, I guess I should say. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know what you make of this new polling. And remember that we are now just 1 week away. Monday, Memorial Day, we will be doing a 1-day membership special. All you need to do to be notified is get on my mailing list at davidpakman.com. And then on Memorial Day, you'll get an email telling you exactly how to avail yourself of this extraordinary membership discount. If you want to join today, you can do so at joinpakman.com. We'll take a quick break and be back right after this. So we're seeing increased concern, not yet panic, but concern for now about the spread of monkeypox, possibly through sexual contact, which we're going to talk about sort of as the second part of this story. So first of all, what is monkeypox? Monkeypox is an infectious disease, a communicable disease that can be transmitted between animals and people, and also between people, is caused by the monkeypox virus. The symptoms are initially fever, headache, muscle pain, swollen lymph nodes, and feeling tired. And then later, you get this rash that forms blisters, which crust over. And in that sense, it's in the kind of universe of smallpox, chickenpox, etc. The type from when you're the time from when you're exposed until you get symptoms is typically around 10 days, which, as you can imagine, can make contact tracing potentially more difficult. And the duration of symptoms is typically 2 to 4 weeks. It can look a lot like chickenpox in humans. And the ways that it spreads, unlike COVID, it does not tend to spread through aerosolized virus particles, although it's conceivable that if you have respiratory involvement, it could spread in that way. But primarily, monkeypox spreads through the handling of what's called bushmeat, through being bit by an animal or scratched by an animal carrying it. And then between humans, it can spread through bodily fluids, contaminated objects, close contact with other humans who have it. The smallpox vaccine, not the monkeypox vaccine, the smallpox vaccine is believed to be about 85% effective at preventing monkeypox. And then in 2019, a monkeypox vaccine called, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Jynneos, also known as Imvanex in the European Union and Invamune in Canada, was approved for adults in the United States. So that's monkeypox. What's happening in this particular outbreak? Earlier this month, several cases were identified in London and one in northeast England. Portugal and Spain have reported several cases. And then a case was confirmed in Massachusetts by the CDC after a man traveled to Canada. Potentially, there's a case in New York City that's under investigation, and health officials are investigating what is believed to be Florida's first positive case. It's a presumptive positive case in South Florida. That case appears to be related to international travel, and that person is isolated. The Canadian nexus is that earlier this month in Quebec, two cases were confirmed. 20 more are still under investigation in Canada. So how is it spreading? What's the connection here? The WHO right now is working on a sexual contact theory. This is very early. We don't have all the details, but David Heyman from the WHO spoke to Reuters and is working on the idea that there seems to be a possible sexual contact kind of chain in a number of the cases so far. Heyman said, quote, "What seems to be happening now is that it's got into the population as a sexual form, a genital form, and is being spread as a sexually transmitted infection, which has amplified its transmission around the world." Very early, important things. And if you're wondering, oh, no, are there already conspiracy theories about monkeypox? Yes, there are. And we're going to get to them momentarily. But if you're wondering, number one, is this likely to trigger a global COVID type response? The answer is almost certainly not. This spreads differently. It's less contagious. And we're going to deal with that kind of in the conspiracy segment. And number two, is this strictly speaking a sexually transmitted disease? Strictly speaking, it's not, but it is a disease that can be spread through sexual contact. And we're going to have more information about that as we continue to learn about this. But that's the latest from the WHO and other authorities on monkeypox. Yes, let's talk about the conspiracy theories. Should we be surprised that within hours of learning about the monkeypox outbreak that is being investigated, the usual suspects are already promulgating and promoting conspiracy theories? No, we should not be surprised. When all you have is a hammer, the hammer of, we're going to tell you who's really doing this, like the globalist, internationalist, Trotskyite socialist, unlike Obama, Trudeau, Macron. Yeah, exactly. It should not surprise us that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Alex Jones and others are already ramping up with the conspiracy theories. Marjorie Taylor Greene is focusing in on Bill Gates. Bill Gates and his remember early in COVID, the idea was, well, Bill Gates, through what looks like just philanthropy, is trying to donate to vaccine development, to surreptitiously track people's location through vaccine microchips or whatever. Okay, here is Marjorie Taylor Greene on Bill Gates and smallpox.
Gates, why is Bill Gates running everything? Why does he get to decide that? You know, Bill Gates, I want to remind everyone, he wants to grow fake meat in a petri dish, and he wants
a peach tree. What?
Wants us to drink poop water. So I don't know why we're letting Bill Gates decide our health decisions.
But I didn't think we were.
Here's the deal. Bill Gates is very concerned about monkeypox because this is something apparently he can make a lot of money off of, and him and his other buddies. But in the blue state of Massachusetts, someone has contracted monkeypox. Perhaps they got it from Canada, from Justin Trudeau's lovely country up there.
It doesn't appear that the fact that there's a Canadian nexus has anything to do with Justin Trudeau's politics. It seems to have to do with Canadian travelers to other countries. But yeah. Do we even care about the facts when you've got a great story?
And then even now, they're reporting monkeypox cases in Sweden and Italy. That is disgusting. And it is terrifying. Nasty, horrible, big bubbles of pus on your skin. I mean, clearly nobody wants this. So they're going to have pictures of all of these kind of terrifying images. They're going to show children with this all over their faces. And of course, they're going to be from, I don't know where they're going to be from. And then they're going to tell you, you have
they're going to be from vile countries.
Wear a mask from, because if you get close to anyone's face and they spit on you, you're going to contract this horrible, terrifying disease, monkeypox. But don't worry, you got to go ahead. I know you have a Dr. Fauci pillow that you sleep with every night. We need to order your Bill Gates pillow. You got to have, you should have a body pillow of Bill Gates, and you can cuddle with it every night. because Bill Gates is going to save the day.
Very, very sick woman. Now, of course, if it's sexual contact that is the mechanism for spread for monkeypox primarily right now, it's not really clear that some kind of full masking protocol is really what we need. Now, it is true that masks can help prevent the spread of monkeypox if there are respiratory elements, but monkeypox doesn't tend to spread via what we would call small respiratory droplets or aerosolized respiratory droplets like COVID. Now, with all of this they stuff, she mentions Bill Gates, but who is always the they? She mentioned Massachusetts, so maybe she thinks liberals in Massachusetts are going to be putting this stuff, but it's the vague they. Obviously, Bill Gates isn't the one doing any of this stuff. And then we go to Alex Jones. Alex Jones insanely claims that it could be the COVID vaccines that are causing monkeypox. And watch how he puts this together.
Monkeypox pops up in more than 20 countries, right, all over Europe, all over the U.S., all over everywhere, where you have people taking AstraZeneca, and J&J, ladies and gentlemen. Because what is AstraZeneca and J&J?
Right.
They're virus vectors that inject the genome of a chimpanzee into your cells and then orders your cells to replicate under those orders.
Okay. So the argument from Alex Jones here is the J&J vaccine inserts a simian means of monkey provenance, a simian genome. And listen, the word monkey is in monkeypox, after all. So therefore, you know,
globalist, internationalist, Trotskyite, socialist.
Yeah. Humans are mostly getting monkeypox from other humans. So this is a completely harebrained and completely free of evidence conspiracy theory. But remember, when the explanation for everything is somebody who's lied to you, somebody who's done something to you, a government, globalists, which are disproportionately Jewish men, when in all of these globalist conspiracy theories, it's Jewish men. When you have those scapegoats, of course, you're going to go to them. So we will be following the monkeypox outbreak from a science perspective, from a perspective of empiricism and things that we actually know and can say with certitude. If you're just listening today and you're morbidly curious about the clips I played of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Alex Jones, you can find them on our Instagram page at David Pakman Show. Let's talk about deceptive headlines that can be written to achieve political goals. I hope that this segment is a good snapshot of how headlines can be used to distort and to influence and to push a particular narrative that may be interesting to one media outlet versus another. So what happened? Well, Joe Biden was recently asked during his current trip to Asia about Chinese aggression towards Taiwan. Now, that's a legitimate issue. We've talked about it on this program. Will China see the chaos of what's happening in Ukraine thanks to the Russian invasion as maybe an opening in which they could make a military move against Taiwan? So China, Taiwan, that's the issue. It's a real issue. It's a legitimate issue. President Joe Biden was asked about it, and Joe Biden confirmed if China invaded Taiwan, the U.S. would intervene. And that's been American policy for a long time. So let's look at the actual question and answer. This is the source material for the topic and the subsequent headlines we're going to look at.
We didn't want to get involved in the Ukraine conflict militarily for obvious reasons. Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are.
That's the commitment we made.
Okay, so that's not news. There's nothing there that's actually newsworthy. There's something called the One China policy. You can agree with the One China policy or you can disagree with it, but the policy has been dating all the way back to 1979. It was first started, stated in 1972. The U.S. acknowledges that China on either side of the Taiwan Strait maintain there is but one China and that Taiwan is a part of China. That's the United States position. Now, in 2016, Donald Trump said the U.S. isn't necessarily bound by the one China policy. And lots of people said, oh, my goodness, Trump is trying to change the one China policy. But then in a phone call in 2017 that Trump had with Xi Jinping, they talked about a number of different things. And Trump agreed at the request of President Xi to honor the one China policy. OK, so we have that. We also have the Taiwan Relations Act from 1979. And we have the six assurances, as they're called, that Reagan gave to Taiwan in 1982, which say that if Taiwan violates the principles the U.S. Believes in, if China violates the principles that the U.S. believes in, the U.S. would help Taiwan to defend itself. If China were to invade, the United States would help Taiwan in that situation. So this has been policy for a really long time. So Biden is asked during the press conference, well, if China attacks, would the U.S. help defend Taiwan? And the United States president says, yes, that's the commitment we made. It's not news. Biden is essentially saying the stuff we've agreed to for the last 40 years, we're going to abide by it. That's it. That's the story. Check out how every news corporation media outlet covered it. And by News Corp, we mean Fox, Fox Business, Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal titled their article, Biden says U.S. would intervene militarily if China invaded Taiwan. Fox News says U.S. military will defend Taiwan if it comes to that, Biden says. Fox Business segment says Biden says U.S. will intervene if China invades Taiwan. Now, again, it's not about these headlines being literally false. It's the fact that they're being written specifically to further the idea of Biden's out there looking for wars. Biden's out there looking for military conflict. And it was Trump who was keeping us out of wars. This has been the narrative. In the George W. Bush era, the right loved war. They loved spreading democracy and all of this different stuff. And then Trump came in and Trump said the Iraq war was a bad idea, even though previously Trump had said I would have gone into Iraq. Doesn't matter. Trump came in and said Iraq was bad, which is true. He's a hypocrite on it. And he said Hillary will get us into wars, but I won't. I'm going to keep us out of wars and get us out of more places. And then the claim made about Joe Biden was Biden's going to get us into wars. Biden's bloodthirsty. Biden's war hungry, even though there was no such evidence of that. And so they want to write headlines that will further that. And most of the Fox audience probably doesn't realize, most of the Wall Street Journal audience doesn't realize, the U.S. has previously said we would help to defend Taiwan in such a case. Biden's not treading new ground here. Biden's not changing policy. He's not announcing new policy. But the story that Fox wants to tell is, here's Biden once again looking for military problems. So they'll say, look at Biden wanting to intervene. Look at Biden wanting to interject and inject the military. The truth is Biden saying, I'm not changing the 40-year policy that we've had. Now, comparatively, Reuters had a more straightforward headline for this story. Reuters called it no change in U.S. policy towards Taiwan, says White House official. Now, it's not only Fox opting for the more salacious headlines. Most of them do it. CNN had a similar one, but it's at least more fair. CNN's headline was Biden says U.S. would respond militarily if China attacked Taiwan, but White House insists there's no policy change. And indeed, there isn't. So it's really important to understand how to research these things directly. If you were to Google one China policy, six assurances to Taiwan, U.S. relationship to China and Taiwan, you would realize there's not a newsworthy element here. Joe Biden is just saying, like, yeah, this is the policy and we're going to stick to the policy. The story is Biden doesn't unilaterally change anything when it comes to China and Taiwan. That doesn't really make for a very exciting headline. So that's the genesis, the oranges, for lack of a better term, of a bunch of these headlines, and hopefully instructive in understanding how these narratives can be woven. This is a story that there was not a lot of coverage of, but it is very disturbing. An anti-vaccine, anti-gay street preacher has reportedly killed his own wife because God told him to. This is a wacky, wacky story. An anti-vaccine street preacher has been arrested for allegedly killing his own wife and allegedly admitting it. So there's not too much doubt here, but we're still being legally careful. The victim is a 25-year-old Kansas woman named Regan Marrick. She previously played goalie for the Kansas University women's soccer team. At the time, her name was Regan Gibbs on the team roster. Her husband is 26-year-old Chad Marrick, suggesting Marrick is her married last name. According to police, Chad Marrick called 911 on himself after this incident. The wife was dead when emergency crews arrived. Tragic and disturbing story. The suspect was one of these street preachers who get a bullhorn and they do religious stuff in populated areas and talk about Jesus. He would also post videos online, which I'm not going to be playing today. And in those videos, he would attack COVID vaccines as spreading the spirit of the Antichrist. He would warn people that they are coming from your children. Who is the they? Well, he would also warn that the LGBTQ agenda is coming for your children. So seemingly that's what he means. He allegedly told police God told him to kill his wife. Quote from Fox 4's Sheree Honeycutt. He called police and said he has killed his wife. Did he possibly say why he may have done that? And a police representative said, quote, he told us that God told him to do it. So this is one of those cases where, you know, when we talk about the Buffalo shooter from now close to roughly 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, the right very quickly jumped to this is just a mentally ill person. Completely disconnected from politics in all ways. Just there's nothing political here. Doesn't pass the sniff test. We look at the manifesto from the Buffalo shooter and we see that it's cogent fascism. It is very much a seemingly coherently parroting and mirroring the substance of the great replacement theory, etc. stuff that we've seen parroted by people like Tucker Carlson on Fox News and others. And yes, to some degree, we can also say, well, most mentally ill people never commit violence and lots of people believe things that are wrong. There's an additional element here, which certainly could be a factor. Nobody's denying that, but we can't ignore the very real kind of political basis for the crime, at least in terms of the beliefs. In this case, this was an anti-vax pastor, preacher. I guess preacher is the right word. An anti-gay preacher, etc. But it seems very secondary to this particular crime. God told me to kill my own wife. This case, to create a contrast is the point. It seems way more plausible to say the main thing here was some form of mental illness. Now, of course, we're diagnosing from a distance or not really diagnosing, but we're evaluating and speculating from a distance. In both cases, we would need to know more and have more firsthand knowledge. But the point here is to say, when we cover up an incident by saying it's only mental illness, we often intuitively say it doesn't really make sense here. These are the perfect contrasts. When we say, well, mental illness for the Buffalo shooter, very specific, politically charged and cogent manifesto. Mental illness there has a very obviously different meaning than in this particular case where a guy allegedly killed his wife because God told him to. Not saying that there aren't multiple factors to all of these stories, but it should at least allow us to see how different the meaning of mental illness can or might be in different stories. Let me know if you agree with the distinction I'm drawing here in what are admittedly tragic events and very complicated events to understand. Let me know your thoughts. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Okay, let's look at a couple of clips. You know, something kind of interesting has started happening over roughly, I'd say, the last 3 to 4 weeks, and it relates to this guy, Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow, a right-wing pillow manufacturer who became friendly with Trump early in the pandemic, started showing up about how he's going to be making masks and all these things. I don't know that they ever made any masks, but really, since the election, Pillow, as we know him, Pillow's goal has been to overturn the election results, insisting dozens of times that we're just days away, we're weeks away, maybe at the most a few months away from blockbuster evidence coming out and just overturning everything. And they're he claims that they're suing all machines.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
All of my coffee machines are now in witness protection as a result of that. So anyway, this thing has happened where clearly Pillow is a laughingstock, and we all recognize that. But over the last 3 to 4 weeks, for me, and I know also for some people in the audience, it started to get almost a little bit sad, where the guy seems kind of genuinely unwell in a way. And we know he has a background of drug addiction in his past. And generally speaking, it from things that he said, we're putting together that he seems to really believe this crazy election stuff. He is spending a ton of money and not even really seeing his family, going all around the country pushing it. And I and some others in the audience have started to wonder whether this is kind of becoming almost more medical in nature in some way. And then all of a sudden over the weekend, Pillow spoke at the Experience the Reawakening, Reawaken America tour. This is the event where like Eric Trump will often speak at it. And sometimes I think Ted Nugent has spoken. We're going to look at some Eric Trump clips a little bit later. And Pillow now seems to have a very bad hand tremor. So I'm going to play this clip for you. It is visual. You sort of hear the tremor in his voice a little bit. But really what you have to see is he starts switching the mic from hand to hand because the mic itself is shaking. And a lot of people emailed me about this. And listen, I mean, something does seem to be going on with the guy. Let's take a look.
Thank you all. You guys keep me going, I'll tell you that. We're not giving up at anything, ever.
So there you can see in the left hand, this is the key moment where the hand is just very, very shaky when the mic is in this hand.
But
And then he seems to recognize it and change the mic to the other hand.
So
and it's still shaking.
Clay was talking about there, and I pray for everyone he was just talking about. There was an interview over next door, and the guy all of a sudden they're interviewing, and I'm trying to tell him what's going to happen, like I do all the media. And once again, he took it down a road here and made it about something it wasn't. And I ended the interview very abruptly.
Now understand that what he's saying also is just completely incoherent.
And it wasn't, and you guys got to realize, normally...
And that hand is just all over the place.
Yeah, I don't do that, but I had to get out here to speak. Normally, I would sit there on the phone with the media for an hours at a time. You could call... I have every media outlet, I think, in my pocket, from Jim Acosta to...
Acosta,
the Daily Beast.
So anyway, it's something seems to be going on here. There seems to be some kind of spiral happening, and it is getting kind of sad. I mean, he has prior drug issues. We don't know anything about what's going on right now. Who knows what it could be? And this isn't to make fun of a medical condition nor a drug addiction, if either or both are factors. It's a reminder that this guy, who has been saying outrageous and untrue things for over a year now about the 2020 election, corrosive, spending his money in a way that is corrosive to democracy, throwing all sorts of innocent victims under the bus. And we'll talk on the bonus show today about how his countersuits against the voting machine companies have been thrown out. He's been doing a lot of damage, and he might genuinely be unwell. It's not an excuse for his behavior, but there's something sad about watching him. He does seem to genuinely believe what he's saying. And one wonders, are there friends and family here that could stage some kind of an intervention? Because quite frankly, this doesn't seem to be good for him. It doesn't seem to be good for his family, which he claims he doesn't see anymore. And it's certainly not good for the country. One other clip I want to play from Pillow from over the weekend. This was at a different event. He is also claiming that the January 6th Trump riots were a setup by the left to deplatform Trump and his supporters from social media, and that it's basically becoming Nazi Germany here. Take a look.
And they took them both because they had a safety net. And what was that? That was January 6th. They had that all set up so that what would happen would be a historical day in history, which was January 7th. Mm. And on January 7th is the day They tried to take our voice forever. They tried to turn out the lights on all of your voices. 1.2 million Americans were deplatformed, including our great president, Donald Trump, on Vimeo, YouTube, Zuckerbucks, Facebook, Twitter.
Vimeo.
You name it. All these platforms were canceled. Well, that was the day that they... And it put fear into everyone. It was just like Nazi Germany, where everybody either had fear or you sat over here and you didn't want to talk about it. You know, you didn't want to talk out of fear. And everybody,
you know, when the Trump rioters committed all that violence and destruction of property, and then Trump was banned from Twitter, it didn't strike me like Nazi Germany. And I'm curious how many of you say, you know, but the first thing my mind went to was Nazi Germany. I don't think so. And you might have noticed, oh, this is an interesting detail. In the background, you might see that there's a bus, and on the side it says Jesus, guns and babies. Jesus, guns and babies. And this was at a campaign in Forsyth, Georgia, for some of the upcoming elections happening there. This is obviously very sad when it comes to Pillow himself, but we can't ignore that there's an extraordinarily dangerous movement here. And so when we talk about these issues, we want to find kind of a reasonable medium where we don't say this is just political disagreement with people who are completely of sound mind, because many of them don't appear to be of sound mind. On the other hand, we can't say this is merely a mental health issue. Most people who have mental health issues don't do any of this stuff. And so we're trying to craft a more accurate but also empathetic narrative about what is a really scary and unhinged movement that is sadly much bigger than any of us would like to admit. But we have to be accurate and we have to admit it's a pretty big movement here in the United States. I want to look at one more clip from this Reawaken America thing. As many of you know, Donald Trump is not a religious guy. Donald Trump is not a spiritual guy. Donald Trump has had, out of necessity, because he was running as a Republican, to start kind of pretending to be religious when he wanted to become the Republican nominee. And so he started saying that the Bible is his favorite book up there with the book he wrote, which he didn't even really write. He had a ghostwriter, but fine. With his own book, The Art of the Deal. And he would try to tell little anecdotes about 2 Corinthians and this type of thing. But when he was asked, like, what's your favorite Bible verse? He didn't even have an answer. He said, well, it's too personal. I don't even want to talk about it. He now has found a very spiritual opposition to abortion, as many of you know. All of this stuff is completely contrived. There's nothing spiritual at all about Donald Trump. And quite frankly, I don't think there is about his kids either. But Eric Trump in particular has really been playing up the religious thing. I think it might be because Eric Trump is kind of the most dim-witted one. Don Jr. has his whole thing that he's used to get attention. Ivanka is less interested in being in the spotlight. And anyway, she converted to Judaism. And there's a lot of anti-Semitism on the right. So it's not like she's going to necessarily play up her religion. But Eric Trump's niche has been playing up his religiosity, playing up his spirituality, and going to events like the overtly religious Reawaken America tour. So he spoke over the weekend and he made the claim that he makes his 4-year-old say the Pledge of Allegiance every night, along with some prayers. And he mentions in this the Antifa Code of Destruction, which is not a text I'm familiar with. Check this out. If this is real, it's horrible. And if he's lying, it's horrible that it's the type of thing that would help ingratiate him with the audience. Take a look.
And literally the second week I'm there, I've got a little 4-year-old, Luke. Uh-oh. And he comes home from school and we say prayers every night together, right? We have these little 3 kind of family prayers that we say, and the Lord's Prayer, 2 others. But
Do any of us believe that every night Eric Trump and his 4-year-old say 3 prayers? Like, I don't know. If they do, it's fine. But I just have a very hard time believing that. But now we go into the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let's make him stand up, put his hand on his heart, and do the Pledge of Allegiance. And so I go, Luke, I'm going to teach you the Pledge of Allegiance tonight. And he goes, oh, Dad, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. He does the whole thing. And I go, you know, in New York, they would have taught him the Antifa Code of Destruction, right? Like, literally.
Anybody know what that is? The Antifa Code of Destruction? That's not something I've ever heard of.
They're not doing the Pledge of Allegiance in New York, that much I can tell you. But why is it that we have this war on the flag? on red, white, and blue. Why is it that we have this war on the Pledge of Allegiance? Why is it that you have people tearing down statues of our historical figures? Why is it that, you know, like, they want to rewrite the governing documents of this country? They're trying to change history. They're trying to change some of the greatest figures.
He doesn't even know what the hell he's talking about. So if it's true that he forces the Pledge of Allegiance onto his four-year-old every night, it's horrifying. If it's a lie, it's horrifying that it's the type of thing he thinks would convince people in the audience to like him. And I sort of suspect this isn't really happening. I'm not really thinking that Donald ever tucked Eric Trump into bed at night. And it seems to me like not exactly the type of family that would really be doing this at night. That's just my instinct, but it is an absolutely fascinating family in that sense. I do feel bad for those kids. And the Pledge of Allegiance does feel really antiquated. I remember when I first moved to the United States, I think it was in first grade, I was introduced to the Pledge of Allegiance, and it always struck me as a little bit weird. And what I always did was I would mouth the words to look like I was participating, you know, peer pressure, I was a kid, but I wouldn't actually say them because it felt so cringy and creepy and bizarre. And then I don't know, I have the memory that it just kind of stopped. I don't know if it might have been that in middle school, the Pledge of Allegiance, instead of being done at the classroom level, was done like over the loudspeaker where the whole school would do it. But then it just faded out. I don't know if it was while I was in middle school or maybe when I went to high school. It's not really clear. It's a strange thing to be doing in school. And it seems bizarre to be doing it every night before going to bed. I don't even believe he's actually doing it. It's worse if he's doing it. But I don't even believe that he's actually doing it. Let me know what you think. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's another viewer who has a parent that they are struggling with when it comes to politics and media. But this is a little bit of a different problem than one we've heard before. Take a listen to this.
David, I know you get these calls all the time.
Yeah.
How do I get my mother off of Fox News? I mean, she's not so radical that she believes in QAnon and all this other crazy crap. But I can't get her to turn off Fox News. It's just insane, man. I mean, as soon as I leave the house, she turns the shit on. I mean, anyway, I try to point out to her, you know, how wrong they are. And then, you know, things happen. And I go, remember, I told you they were wrong about that. And, you know, and I told her, I said, see, I'm right about 90% of stuff. And Fox News is wrong about 90% of stuff. But I can't get her to turn it off.
Yep.
Anyway. Thanks. Love your show, man. You do a great job.
Thank you. Well, so listen, this is tough. Persistent Fox News watching can be a hard habit to break or a hard addiction to break. One of the things I would suggest, because it sounds like your mom is really pretty deep into it, instead of immediately trying to get her off of Fox, what I would suggest is just that she diversify the media diet. Oftentimes with these situations, you want to take the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance initially might be saying, hey, don't go after her and say never watch Fox News again. But it might be add this or that to your media diet. Check out the PBS NewsHour or maybe watch, you know, what, get more variety in your media diet. Maybe read something would be an interesting one as well, though not everybody reads. Consider that the first step. And you know, think about it like someone who's addicted to, I don't know, imagine someone every morning has one of those sugary toaster strudels. I don't even know if those are around, but I remember when I was a kid, that was like the epitome or like a Pop-Tart or something, okay? And please, if you work for those companies, don't sue me. I'm just saying, they have a lot of sugar. Imagine someone every single day has a toaster strudel with extra powdered sugar and maple syrup and all this stuff on it. It's like, okay, that's really bad. But if we just go in and we say, just stop cold turkey, no more toaster strudels. You can understand how it'd be very difficult to get that person to say, okay, sure, no more toaster strudels. What do they replace it with? So if that was what I was dealing with, I might first go in and go, hey, you know what? It might be interesting just for diversity, you know, to try different things. If one morning a week, instead of the toaster strudel, You instead get a piece of beautiful multigrain toast and then spread some avocado on it with some spicy chili oil. Oh, okay. Well, now we've got an alternative. You're not saying drop the toaster strudel. You're saying have 6 toaster strudels a week and have 1 piece of avocado toast. And then if that goes okay, you go, hey, you know what? There's so many great breakfasts. What if one morning you had a bowl of Greek yogurt with sliced up berries and a no sugar granola? It's delicious. So now you've got 5 toast. And then later you can go, hey, you know what? How are you feeling, by the way? You feeling any better now that you're introducing some other? And you get the point. Okay, so this is the same thing I would suggest with Fox News. I would say, hey, you know, there's so many different media outlets out there. Variety is good. What if one morning you listen to NPR's Fresh Air instead of watching Fox and Friends or whatever the case may be? Start there and then see where that gets you. And, you know, it's an uphill battle for sure. But that's probably with someone who's really addicted. That's probably where I would start. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. As I mentioned earlier, a judge has dismissed Mike Pillow's countersuits against Smartmatic and Dominion voting machine manufacturers. And we are going to talk about what's going on. Pillow is also being asked to pay Smartmatic's attorney's fees, which is just beautiful. Republicans are vowing to kill the domestic terrorism bill currently being discussed in the Senate. Why? Well, I'll tell you. And an archbishop of the Catholic Church is barring Nancy Pelosi from receiving communion because of her support for abortion rights. We've talked before about Catholic elected officials and abortion and communion in the context of Joe Biden. We will also talk about it today in the context of Nancy Pelosi. Get instant access, and I do mean instant, by signing up for the bonus show at joinpacman.com.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money. Everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Thank you, Alex. And also, if you would like a discount off of the cost of a membership, get on my newsletter at davidpacman.com. You will thus get an email on Monday, Memorial Day, telling you how to take advantage of a beautiful membership discount.
I've got a message. 나 지금 심심해란 말이고 내 손이 바빠. 대화가 끊기지 않게.
Hey, babe. 마주가고 싶은 너에게 가로 세로처럼 취향을 말해줘. 널 알아가게. 마음과 마음이 닿게. 손과 손이 닿게. 쉬다가도 돼 넌 나의 품에. Oh. 걸어갔던 내 맘이 조금 답답하지만 참는 자기의 복이 있잖아
찬스를 시작해 서로에 대한 얘기 어쩌면 어찌란 얘기들까지도 모든 길은 열어둬 선은 지원해줘 직구적은 뭐어때 이대로 좋잖아
오늘 네 옆자리 나 널 웃게 해줄 사람 나 조금씩 마음을 풀어놔도 돼 알고 싶어져 알고 싶어져 너의 모든 게 다
사소하더라도 알려줘 네 모든 걸 오늘 네 옆자리 나 너를 웃게 해줄 사람 나
Pose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh, yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are.
That's a commitment we made.
In his first trip to Asia as president, Joe Biden's promise to defend Taiwan militarily if it's invaded by China. The White House took back his words, but was it a gaffe by the president or a new U.S. policy? We'll talk about Biden's trip, Taiwan, and today's meeting of the Quad, India, Australia, Japan, and the U.S. China's criticized the Quad as the Indo-Pacific version of NATO. Plus, we look at The Ransom, a new series in the New York Times detailing how France devastated Haiti's economy by forcing Haiti to pay massive reparations for the loss of slave labor after enslaved Haitians rebelled, founding the world's first black republic in 1804.
The New York Times article that was published this weekend, I think, will shed light on the very question of what makes the case of Haiti what we see today in terms of this country that people often refer to as the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations says the number of people displaced by war, conflict, and human rights abuses has topped 100 million for the first time. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, announced the grim milestone as he met with Rohingya refugees who fled violence and government persecution in Burma.
Much as we're all focusing on Ukraine as a catastrophic emergency, we must not forget that there's other critical situations in the world that need attention and resources.
In Burma, at least 17 Rohingya, including three children, drowned after their boat capsized off the coast over the weekend. Dozens more are missing and feared dead. It's believed the Rohingya were attempting to cross the Bay of Bengal from Malaysia, fleeing persecution by Burma's military rulers. The UN reports as many as 10,000 Rohingya were killed by Burmese forces during the 2017 genocide, though some estimates put the death toll at double that number. Another 730,000 Rohingya were forced to flee Burma. In Mexico, three Honduran asylum seekers died Monday after their boat capsized off the coast of Veracruz. At least four others are missing. Another four were rescued, including a 12-year-old child. This is one of the survivors.
It is something sad, but just imagine, people won't stop trying to reach the U.S. because it's supposed to provide a better life. Don't think things are easy in our country.
This comes after a 36-year-old father from El Salvador and his 7-year-old son drowned in the Suchiate River as they attempted to cross into Mexico from Guatemala. In related news, asylum seekers trapped in the Mexican border of city of Tijuana led a protest Monday denouncing the Biden administration's use of Title 42, the Trump-era pandemic order that's been used to bar entry to over 2 million people arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border seeking refugee status. A federal judge on Friday ordered the Biden administration to continue enforcing the policy. Protesters insist they have a right under international law to claim asylum.
For us, Title 42 ends the dream of many, because in all immigrants' dreams, asylum is a right, and Title 42 takes that right away from us.
We've been here for almost a year in Tijuana. We've been in a shelter for 5 months, and we've been in a rented apartment for 5 more months, and it has been very difficult. I hope they give us support and let us enter the U.S., and we hope things there will be different, because here in Tijuana there is also a lot of danger.
In Yemen, three people were killed Monday after a drone crashed into a residential neighborhood in the capital, Sana'a. Witnesses said the Saudi-led coalition drone was shot down by Houthi rebels as it circled the skies over the capital.